Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on this Wednesday here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. I am in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Penn State and Pitt, of course, get things rolling on Saturday at Heinz Field. It'll be a noon kickoff. Jack Ham, Derek Williams, Roger Corey, Jeff Tarman, and I on the air beginning at 10:30 Saturday. We have a lot to talk about today. Bill Hillgrove, the legendary play-by-play voice of the Steelers. You hear him on 100.9 The Valley. He'll be joining us on the show today to talk about the Steelers and about Pitt. He's done Pitt football for decades. I believe that he's in his 45th, maybe his 46th season, working with Dick Rote on Pitt basketball. He is one of the classy guys out there, a guy that I cite as a positive example to my class, and I have tremendous respect for him. And Bill Hillgrove joins us today. Also joining us today, how often do we hear people complain about the officials? I'm sure when Joe Susan does his get-together on Wednesdays for the luncheons, every once in a while he probably gets an officiating question. Joe Paterno used to get them all the time. Bill O'Brien got them all the time. And I can tell you, James Franklin gets them at their respective quarterback clubs over the years. I've heard Pat Chambers get them all the time. Now, one thing that they've done with basketball, when they do the Hoops Club luncheons here, the last 2 years they brought in Joe Polish. And I've had a chance to talk with Joe before the group about officiating. Now, as all of you know, I don't officiate games on the air. I just won't do it. I have too much respect for how hard the job is. Now, if I think the call is not right, I'll just say the call's not right, but you don't make it personal and you just move on, because 9.5, 9.8 times out of 10, they're right. And if it's a great call, I'll tell you it's a great call. And, of course, replay backs you up. Joe Polish, by the way, is a first-class referee. He is relatively close to our area where he lives. He does a great job explaining to the fans how it works, and he is moving his way through the ranks. I would not doubt that Joe moves his way up through the ranks. Well, in football, Bill Carollo has worked Super Bowls. Yes, he has worked Super Bowls. He has been the director of officiating in the Big Ten for the last few years now and has done a great job. And we just thought you'd like to hear it from their side. How often do they evaluate these guys? How tough are they when they evaluate these guys? And so we're going to hear from him. Back to the Pitt game for a moment. Craig Meyer does a great job for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette of covering Pitt football. Craig Meyer is going to join us in the final half hour of the show today. And then there's the Eagles. The Eagles have made deals. Yes, deals. Of course, the big Sam Bradford deal that they made. That, look, I don't get surprised by a lot in sports. That surprised me. And I think it's a great deal for them. Carson Wentz is going to take the helm. He's going to run with it. That's fine. And guess what? They also made the trade of Eric Rowe yesterday to the Patriots. They did so for offensive lineman Josh Klein. And there are a lot of people, there have been a lot of stories that he was likely going to be flipped by the Eagles, but the Patriots are now going to retain Klein's rights. And there's a lot of talk that Klein might be released by the Patriots. Rowe was a second-round pick a year ago by the Eagles, and, of course, that was one of Chip Kelly's drafts. Now, as a rookie at 31 tackles, he had a pick. He did fine. But they say he's been inconsistent, and they decided to deal him. And Doug Peterson acknowledged that he felt Rowe experienced, quote, hiccups early in the offseason, and was pulled back a little bit as a result. So he ended up sliding down the depth chart, and so they've dealt him. And he's gone to New England. So it's interesting. The Eagles have had a very interesting 48 hours, and we're going to bring in Matt Leon from KYW in Philadelphia in just a few minutes to talk about what's been a very interesting 48 hours in Philadelphia. Today, we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Don't forget our high school football roundtable coming up tomorrow from 3:35 to 4. We're going to bring in our high school announcers to preview the games you'll hear in the Sunbury Broadcasting family of stations. And can you believe it? Friday night is week 3 of the high school football season. How about that? That's amazing. Week 1 of the NFL season actually starts tomorrow night with Carolina and Denver. Of course, the Eagles will play this weekend, and Carson Wentz is going to be their starting quarterback. So let's bring in Matt Leon from KYW in Philadelphia. Matt, there are really very few things in sports that surprise me these days, but that really surprised me when I saw, out of nowhere, Sam Bradford get dealt to the Vikings.
It surprised me, not the concept, but the timing. I thought we were kind of past that. Like, I thought, you know, the summer, even during the beginning of training camp, I thought, you know, that was a possibility. But you get past all the preseason games and into the final cuts and all, and you don't think something like that's on the table. And you got to give Howie Roseman credit. He really pulled one off there, I think.
Yeah, it sure did. Not only that, but they get the draft pick back. That's a huge thing to me. I mean, look, are you going to get to the playoffs this year? No. Are you building for the future? Yes. They get that draft pick back, and I think that's a big part of this.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll be honest with you, I think most in the fan base would have accepted the trade for the conditional fourth-round pick in 2018. Getting the first-round pick in 2017, that just puts you over the moon. You know, they gave up a lot to move up to get into position to Carson Wentz, and that was the big criticism a lot of people had, and I think justifiably, because there are a lot of holes. But what you see is that really helps close the gap of what you gave up, and it doesn't make it hurt so much going forward. And then today the Eagles reportedly traded Eric Rowe to the Patriots, and they get an offensive lineman back and a conditional fourth-round pick in 2018. So Howie Roseman is really stockpiling all these draft picks and kind of restocking the cupboard so that they can build around the Carson Wentz experiment at quarterback, which starts Sunday.
I mean, how much do you really know about Carson Wentz?
I've said this. I was talking about this in the newsroom. It is really, when you take a step back and think about it, it is stunning how little there is known about this kid that they are turning the franchise over to. I mean, he played at FCS North Dakota State and a five-time defending national champion, but it is FCS, and I'm a big fan of FCS, so I'm in no way slighting it, but it is a step below, for the most part, the big-time college football. He missed most of his senior year with an injury. He missed most of the preseason with an injury, and it's fascinating. You don't really hear anybody against this. Yeah, give it to him. Let him take over, and we'll see. I mean, he's got the size. He's got the metrics for it. And the little bit you saw in the game against Tampa Bay, he was pretty good. But you're asking an awful lot of this kid from day one to lead a franchise. And not really not just any franchise, but a franchise that has a rabid fan base that is desperate to get in position to eventually win a championship.
I just find it. It's not as if there's four preseason games to evaluate him because he was out.
Yeah, no, I agree.
You know, and not only that, but, you know, hurting your ribs is not great for a quarterback.
Now, they say that he's healthy and ready, because the thought was that if he wasn't ready, they were going to go with Chase Daniel. So you have to assume he's healthy. But, no, I agree with you. There is very little to go on. And it is a little, you know, all you heard for 2 months was how, you know, well, we want Carson to sit and he's not quite ready, and you know, we want him to learn and stuff like that. and then they make the trade to with Bradford, and all of a sudden it's, oh, well, he was so great in preseason. Everything we saw just told us this kid's ready. And I know there's a good amount of spin that we get with any organization,
sure,
but it's a pretty 180 to go from that cautious to this, oh, my, wait till you see what this kid can do. There's just not a lot of reps out there that he's had.
Do they have enough around him to make this at least easier for him in transition to a speed that he's never played before?
I don't think so offensively. I think they've got some possibilities. You know, I mean, Ryan Matthews is a very good NFL back, but he has struggled to stay healthy throughout his career. Darren Sproles is one of the best in NFL history catching passes out of the backfield, but you have to assume he is on the downside of the bell curve. At wide receiver, you've got a bunch of question marks. You've got Jordan Matthews, who has caught a ton of passes in his first two seasons in the NFL. I thought he took a step back last year personally. I thought maybe his numbers were okay, but if you watch the games, I felt like he racked up a lot of his stats last year in garbage time in games that were already decided. You got Nelson Agholor, who hopes were high coming into this year that he would take a big step forward as a first-round pick from a year ago, and you've seen nothing to indicate that. There was actually some people kicking around whether he'd actually make the team. Josh Huff did what Josh Huff always does. He shows flashes of brilliance and then gets lost for a series at a time. The one interesting guy from a skill position standpoint is Doriel Green Beckham, the wide receiver they acquired from Tennessee.
Yeah.
My goodness, does he have the physical skills. I mean, he's got the everything you want for. You're building a prototype wide receiver. You might build this kid. But he, you know, you got it. There's some red flags with some stuff off the field. You have to wonder why a Tennessee team that doesn't exactly have skill position talent, all over the place will let him go with a second-round pick after a year for an offensive lineman who's just a guy. And he showed some stuff in the preseason. He played a couple of the preseason games, did catch a touchdown on a fade showing he could be a red zone guy, and had a couple of across-the-middle catches in the final game against the Jets that he might have the highest upside of any skill position guy on the offense. But he also has the potential to not be a factor at all. The most consistent positions probably tight end with Zach Ertz, Brent Celek, and a kid to keep an eye on, Trey Burton, who has been with the team the last couple years, but is incredibly athletic at that tight end hybrid position that they might have to find ways to try to get him the football. But to answer your original question, I think they're going to struggle on offense. I think they would have struggled on offense with Sam Bradford. And now you kind of throw in a rookie quarterback.
Yeah.
I think it's not crazy to think that if there's a blueprint for success, it's play good defense, and I think the defense will be pretty good.
Yeah,
you know, hope Wentz can just play smart, sound football, not turn it over, you know, take what's in front of them, and you win more than your fair share of 20-13 games, 17-10 games. I don't think it's crazy. I don't think it's realistic. But I think if there's a road to success in a weak division, or at least in a mediocre one on paper, right, that would be it.
I was going to ask, my next question was going to be, how much more pressure is this put on the defense?
I don't know how much more. I think it's going to be a good unit. I thought it was going to be pretty good coming into camp, and I actually, I'm buying the stock after watching them. I know preseason is what it is,
right,
and it wasn't so much results that were impressive as you saw a lot of guys that are real comfortable in what they're doing in Jim Schwartz's scheme. Depth is a little bit of an issue. If they get a couple of key guys hurt, you could see a big drop-off at certain positions, but I think the defense has potential. I think they'll give up a lot of yards. I don't know that they'll give up a lot of points. And I think they'll be opportunistic. And, if you can get some touchdowns on defense and special teams, that can help flip some things. So, that could be key.
And the other part, too, is you probably have, not one of us has any idea what their game plan is on offense for Sunday. Nobody does.
Oh, yeah. And it's going to be fascinating. Can you ever remember this, a team in this situation,
no,
week one like this, and turning it around? From both sides, from the Vikings, it'll be interesting to see what they do with Bradford and with the Eagles, because Wentz is a completely different quarterback from Bradford, not just experience-wise, but, Bradford, you know where he's going to be in the pocket the whole time. With Wentz, now all of a sudden you're opening up a lot of read option stuff, a lot more throw on the run. So it might be, give him a handful of plays he's really comfortable with, and we'll build off of that as the game goes on.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks.
Thank you.
Matt Leon, KYW, Philadelphia. And the Sam Bradford trade to the Minnesota Vikings that yielded a first-round pick. You look, you're a young, rebuilding franchise. You need picks. Well, they're going to go with Carson Wentz. See what he can do. Why not? Really, why not? So that's what they're going to do starting on Sunday. And, of course, you'll hear the Eagles on Eagle 107 with Merrill Reese and Mike Quick. Saturday, of course, Penn State in action at Heinz Field. I've never been in Heinz Field before. I know people are surprised by that. And believe me, I get offers for tickets. I really do. It's just really hard on a Sunday to look at everybody and go, hey, I'm taking off. I mean, John Norwood, the Steelers trainer, I mean, we've been friends for 35 years. I mean, he used to be the Penn State basketball trainer. You know, Jim Bradley. And enough people, and I think I know one of their Hall of Famers pretty well. So it's I've never walked in there. I've broadcast a game at Pitt Stadium. In fact, I broadcast a couple of games at Pitt Stadium. I broadcast at Three River Stadium. I've never done a game at Heinz Field, nor have I ever walked into Heinz Field. So it'll be the first time. I guess somebody said we're down near the goal line or we're in the end zone or something like that. That's fine. Look, if you're high enough, it doesn't really matter. It's the issue, for example, I remember doing a game in Landover when Penn State played Indiana, and we were in the corner of the end zone. Everything from the 50-yard line toward us was easy to call, but the problem was we were in the corner but low. So everything at the far end of the field, especially from the 30-yard line in, you really had to work to get that done. And I remember, of course, doing the Pinstripe Bowl, and we were in the Yankee broadcast booth, which would be behind home plate. Well, that's also low there, too. So everything, again, coming toward you, you're fine. But going to the far end of the field, which is where the game-winning touchdown and was scored by Penn State and the game-winning extra point by Sam Ficken, happen to be hit. That's, you know, you have to come up with ways of doing it. And so I don't mind being in the end zone. For example, I was at the goal line at the Rose Bowl. Well, vantage point was perfect. You're up high, it's no big deal. If Heinz Field's the same way, it's no big deal. That's it. And you know what? You can't do anything about it, so you don't worry about it. You don't worry about it. All right, everybody complains about officials, so let's hear from the supervisor of officials, Bill Carollo. That's coming up in the next half hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, where it's 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for this day in sports history. 1905, Frank Smith of the White Sox pitched a no-hitter against the Tigers. The game set an American League record for the most lopsided victory for a no-hitter at 15-0. Joe Nuxhall is the youngest player to ever play in the majors, like 15 years, 10 months for the Reds. Well, it was on this date in 1943, during World War II, that the youngest player to appear in an American League game took place. Pitcher Carl Scheib of the Philadelphia A's, 16 years, 8 months, and 5 days old. 1972, Rick DeMont lost his gold medal that he received in the 400-meter swimming event because of a banned drug that was found in his system during routine drug testing. You know what the routine drug was? It was for his asthma medication, which he had reported on his form before the Olympics began. I think it's a disgrace that they did that to him. I've always felt it was a disgrace, though. Eddie Murray, the Orioles, his 500th career home run on this date against the Detroit Tigers. Only the third person ever to have 3,000 hits and 500 home runs in his career. And Scott Sheldon of the Texas Rangers on this date in 2000 became the third player in the history of Major League Baseball to play all nine positions in one game. The first, I believe, was Bert Campaneris with the A's. The second, I believe, was Cesar Tovar with the Minnesota Twins. Scott Sheldon of the Rangers doing it on this date in 2000. All right, one thing that you'll find if you ever go to a coach's luncheon where no information is supposed to get out, and it doesn't. But when you're in there, coaches do get their fair share of officiating questions. The fans in every one of these luncheons are never enamored with the officiating. But you never hear it from the official's point of view. Bill Carollo has worked as the lead referee in a couple of Super Bowls. He had a great NFL career. At one point, he was the head of the officials union. He is now the supervisor of officials for the Big Ten, but also the Mid-American Conference. He's a first-class guy, and every time I've ever needed anything, anytime I've ever called him for anything, he calls right back. Now, he also knows that we don't officiate the game in the air either, because I have great respect for officials. So let's bring in Bill Carollo. Bill, how extensive happen to be your evaluations and clinics, and where do you go to do all these things?
You know, from North Dakota all the way to New York, you know, Manhattan.
Sure.
My officials, and because the MAC places some teams further east for me, Buffalo and University of Massachusetts, and so on. So I started this consortium for football, and coming from the NFL, and kind of placed them together, and it's more of a feeder training program, this collegiate officiating consortium for football. And at each level, I look pretty much for the same person. If I'm bringing somebody into a D3, or in this case, let's say Division One, I may look at them and try to place them in Missouri Valley, or maybe I'll look at them for Division One, Big Ten right away. But they have to have the capability. That's number one. That's what I look for. Secondly, they have to have the capacity to keep getting better. If you're a really great official, Steve, and you're the top guy, but you know what? You're 50 years old or 60 years old. You're never going to get any much better, or even 40. But I don't think you're going to get much better. You're at your peak. That might hurt you. So you have to, you know, have the capability to work at that level. I don't want to bring you into the Big Ten and train you in 5 years. He's going to be a good official. You have to be a very, very good official to get to the Big Ten. And you have to keep getting better, the capacity to keep improving. And the third thing is character and the right chemistry. You have to fit in. You have to have the right chemistry. But character is important in our program. So you can get all the calls right, but if you're egotistical and you think you're a former player and you played in the Big Ten and you did this and did that, doesn't make you a great official. And I don't want just good officials. I want great officials. So you got to be able to fit in and have the right chemistry and fit into the organization. And some companies in the public sector or private sector have personalities. Certain types of people fit in well to a big or large company. It's the same in officiating. It's like a head coach on a staff. Does the guy fit into the staff?
I've noticed that when I've gone to scrimmages and I've talked to your officials, they get along really well.
Yeah.
I mean,
just social, Steve. You have to communicate with the coaches. They have to at times communicate with the media. They have to communicate with the athletic director. They have to communicate possibly with the fans, you know. In their duties, and when people come up to them on a Friday night having dinner, you know, in College Station or up by you guys around the Big Ten, no matter where it is, big or small campuses, they may be recognized. We try to put our guys under the radar, Steve. I don't like, you know, them flashing around, I'm the ref for tomorrow's game. We have pretty strict rules for that, but they get it. They have a code of conduct. We just sent out a letter of expectations, had all three commissioners, including Jim Delaney, sign it. They understand it. We had to modify it for social media this year. Had to put things in there that we don't have problems in interviews, and they have to. You want to talk to Bill Lemonnier or John O'Neill, one of my top head referees? Well, they have to get permission. It's like almost grade school. It sounds a little foolish. Sounds a little over managing it. But the reality is, we want to make sure that they're representing the Big Ten. We want to make sure that we don't have a conflict of interest, and they aren't commenting on some game that happened in Champaign or at Madison. You know, even if it wasn't his game, what did you think? Would you think that was a good call? Well, they have a strong opinion one way or the other. I don't want them voicing it out there publicly, criticizing or being the spokesman for the Big Ten. So, you know, we funnel a lot of this stuff through Scott Chipman and Diane Dietz and so on. This year at our clinic, officials clinic, we're going to invite all the media. If they want to come, they can come to our clinic and observe and see what we're doing, you know, for a couple of days. Of course, we do some things at the Big Ten kickoff luncheon, you know, with the radio or the TV people. We usually present what we're doing. But those are the things that we look for. And we may identify someone, and I'm looking, when I go talk to, Urban Meyer, and I talk to his staff, and I say, well, can I speak to the team, you know, about the new rules? I tell the coaches and I tell the players, hey, when you finish playing, I hope you go to the NFL. Most of you won't make it. And when you don't make it, I hope you come back and you become, come onto the staff at Penn State and be a coach. And some of you say, well, boy, that doesn't pay a lot of money. It does this, and it's a lot of hours. It's tough. Then when you give up all that, why don't you go into business and become a referee on the side? And I'll help you become a referee in the Big Ten, get you to the NFL, work a Super Bowl, whatever it might be, whatever your goals are. You know, and so I'm out recruiting even our players in the league, you know, when they finish, if there's an opportunity. And that we haven't done a whole lot in the past, and we haven't done that very well. We just get whoever shows up, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's a little more structured program. You know, I know what I'm looking for. We want to be the best program in the country. I've only been at it 3 years, so I'm not saying I'm the expert at it. We have to improve. We measure our guys on every single call. It's either right or wrong. If it's a tough call, it's still either right or wrong. And we tell them how they can get better position. You got the call right, but you were at the 3-yard line. You're supposed to be at the goal line. You could have fumbled the ball, and you weren't in position to see it.
Right.
You know. So we have a staff of about 26 people with NFL affiliation that are currently on the NFL staff, active officials. And we have a couple guys that are retired officials from the NFL that are on our staff, and they work with our officials. We have graders, we have observers, we have evaluators. They look at every single play, TV, all angles, and then coaching tape, all angles, and grade it. So I put in a much stringent accountability for our officials than they've ever seen before, maybe the stringest in the country. But my philosophy, and I told the guys this, that you may not agree with me, and when you're the boss, you can do what you want to do, but we're going to measure you, and you're not going to get better unless we tell you what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong. And we put out training tapes so they look at a lot of video. I create a training tape every week. My replay director, coordinator, Dean Blandino, who runs the replay for the NFL, he does my replay. He works for me. And they get lots of video each week. And when they get written tests in the off season, we just put out a 75-question test every month in the off season. And when the season starts, they get weekly quizzes. So year-round, they're being tested by rules. I don't really test them in physical fitness in the mile or half mile or this, but that's part of their evaluation. So when all this evaluation is done, 70% of their grade is either they got the call right or wrong.
Right.
And then the other 30% has to do with their physical fitness, their rules knowledge, their decisiveness, their professionalism, and mechanics.
What about the replay guys, Bill? What do you look for in the replay guys? Because obviously that 30% about fitness isn't going to fit in there, but you need to have specific guys looking at specific things on every play, not just the ones that are actually that the fans think are being reviewed, because you're reviewing every play.
Right. It's slightly different. They have to get the calls right. right, in the replay booth. That's our last stop. That's our last-ditch effort. But obviously, physical fitness isn't important, so I don't grade them on that. But I don't want some old guy my age that's 50 pounds overweight up there eating with the media, walking around, shirt hanging out. They got to look professional. They have to be able to communicate with the athletic director. They have to be able to run into the, maybe the university president or board of regents and so on. So so there's a little bit of that, but I don't have a grade, you know, in that category for them. Do they have to be professional? Yes. Do they have to be decisive? Yes. Do they have to have rule knowledge? Yes. So the physical fitness aspect, what I gave you was for the guys in the field.
Right.
So, you know, that. And then there's a couple other, there's some, with decisiveness that I mentioned in there, and I'd have to pull out my replay if I can do it. I just.
Oh, sure.
But there's, we have a couple other categories that would fit for these guys. For replay, and well, as we talk, I can come back to that.
But that's not a problem.
But they get graded very similar to that, and it's to be honest, it's the same grading system that we used in the let me see if I can find it quick in the NFL.
Right. By the way, what do you prefer? You had to go under the hood for almost 20 years to
right.
look at plays. And now you have this system which you're supervising. Which one, in your opinion, in terms of making the game better, is the better system?
Well, I think you can do it both ways. And to be honest with you, when I started in the NFL, we had replay, and we had the guy up in the booth buzzing and making all the calls. And we got rid of that as we continued. We took too long. We interrupted too often. It was brand new, and we didn't train very well, to be honest with you, in the NFL. We took old guys like me, 30 years in the up in the booth, hide them because you can't run, and then you have to run a VCR, and you have to run multiple screens and look at video, and you know what? It took us 5-6 minutes to look at a replay sometimes. It was a problem. We had the wrong people. So what I look for in a booth, I look, you know, decisiveness is important, but I look for someone that's an analytical type thinker, someone like a lawyer, like an engineer, maybe with some HR experience that can go through a process, a step-by-step. Is it reviewable? Yes. Is it a big-ticket item? What does that mean? Well, he went out the 42-yard line, and it was really the 43-yard line, but it's 3 minutes into the game. There's a 12-minute mark on the first quarter. Should I stop? No, you shouldn't stop that. You have to make some judgments. Is this a big – we're not there to fix every single play. And if they're stopping too many things, Steve, and then – They're right. It's a reviewable play, and it is wrong. That's a problem. They get downgraded for that, all right? So that they don't understand, you know, the big picture as far as what we're looking for as far as the replay position. And let me see if I can just pull this, if I can find something that note offhand here.
Because the replay component, obviously, as you mentioned, is the last stop, the last-ditch effort. And the vast majority of games you go through, they don't have to go to it anyway, which is a tribute to what your officials are doing on the field. But every once in a while, because of the speed of the game, it is so fast that you need that component.
Absolutely. You know, it's really, really important. So they are different. You know, there's like I say, you can do it both ways. Now, the NFL modified their way, and they brought it to the field, and it's the referee makes the decision. He's probably the most knowledgeable guy in the field, including the booth. And then he has a replay person that he guides and directs as they look at the film together. I think two sets of eyes are better than one. However, they're so limited, and they put the pressure on the coach, you know, and the challenge. And they limit the challenges, and it depends on the number of camera angles, how big the game is.
Right.
Versus the college game, they look at every single play. It's being challenged quietly behind the scenes every single play.
Right.
The pressure on the Sunday replay guy is only the last 2 minutes of each half.
Right.
Otherwise, he doesn't have to do anything until they buzz him, and he'll look at the play. So, and we have about the same number of stoppages and about the same number of reversals in the NFL versus college. But I personally, now that we've gone to the college way, I found that the coaches, the fans, the media, they like the college method, that every call is being looked at. If you don't have any more timeouts left and we're dead wrong and it's reviewable, good luck. We're not going to stop it. You're out of timeouts. And, you know, for a technicality, we're going to decide the game on them, and everyone knows it's a mistake. So they have to save their timeouts, so it gets a little dicier than Saturday. And if you watch closely, the NFL is slowly migrating to the college way. Now they're saying every scoring play, every change of possession, every this, after we're going to go to the sideline and go look at it, you know. And so they're looking at the major ticket items, and they're doing it closer. The guy upstairs is stopping it more often, not just the last 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. So you can do it both ways. I'm very comfortable with the college way, even though I was part of, as a referee, making the decision myself. And part the reason I'm comfortable is I'm hiring a lot of lawyers that are replay people now.
Right.
I would say more than 50% of the last 3 years have a legal background. And it isn't just that they're a lawyer. They have some skills, analytical-type process skills. Go through the step and stop right. Okay, it sure doesn't look like he caught the ball. They said catch in the field. And from my gut feeling, Steve, I don't think he caught the ball. Right. But show me the evidence. Show me the ball loose on the ground, not in his control. He probably didn't catch it. If I had to bet, he didn't catch it. But we were having guys flip calls almost like an eighth official up there because they were imparting the referee experience judgment. He probably didn't catch it, but probably isn't good enough. And when guys start making changes to play, right. A, we get in trouble. B, they're dead wrong based on our replay philosophy. And I actually head up replay for the NCAA and the CFO. We have a committee. I have two other guys that run different conferences, but I head up replay, and I just hosted about 200 replay people in the country at the Big Ten this past weekend. Right. And we brought in, actually, in this case, we brought in the head referees, and we're trying to educate the officials on the field to be more knowledgeable about replay.
Oh, that's great, Bill. I appreciate it. And again, I thank you for the time you gave us very, very much, because this was enlightening for everybody, because I think fans, it's so quick to sit there and say, oh, and of course, guess who gets blamed? You've now explained the process to him, and I thank you for the time you gave us to do that.
Perfect.
Very, very much. Bill, thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Bill Carollo, Supervisor of Officials for the Big Ten. At least now you get their point of view as to how they do things. You try to give, you know, on the show, you try to present as well-rounded an experience as possible. We, you know, yesterday we took a lot of calls from fans. Today you have guests, so we get the perspective on the Sam Bradford trade. We're going to get Bill Hillgrove's perspective in the next half hour. Craig Meyer, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, final half hour. But, I mean, how often do you hear on a show the supervisor of officials for any league or conference come on and talk about what they do and how they evaluate? And hopefully it was educational for everybody. Like I said, I have a lot of respect for Bill. I also have a lot of respect for Rick Boyages, who's the supervisor of officials for Big Ten basketball. And we've had Rick on the show before, too. And I think it's great that they do these things. Rick told me one time, he says, look, he said, you know what? He said, it's really great that you want to do this. He says, because I think it's good for us to get out there and tell our story. He said, not our side of the story, but to tell our story as to what we do. He says, because people don't know how much we do and how much evaluation we do. Like, the last thing an official wants to do is stand out. The last thing they want. And I know people think, oh, yeah, that holding penalty called at just the right time. You know, and it's all sorts of conspiracy theories. Look, these guys want to advance and keep their spots, too. If they're being evaluated by the Bill Carollos of the world, they're being evaluated by guys who work Super Bowls. And they have everything now. And by the way, this year they can go to Chicago. And they can go to a central location and check replays. All right. Next half hour, it's Bill Hillgrove as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.